The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
Today we're just passing almost 3 weeks of the Omer. We're privileged to have with us tonight Rabbi Moti Hadar from the Johannesburg Sephardi congregation, Hebrew congregation, and we're going to chat about the Omer, about various other things around the Pasha, and generally what it's like to be living in lockdown and what we should be doing from a religious point of view, not only from a religious point of view, how we should be looking after us, looking at ourselves, looking after our kids, just from a spiritual point of view. So welcome, Rabbi. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Sorry about that. Great to have you. And Rabbi, do you want to just kick off and give us a little bit of a insight into the Omer and where we are and, you know, how we're going with that? So that, you know, what the impact is on us, what we should be looking for during this time.
Sure. It's a great question, and it is a very special time that we find ourselves in at the moment, the Omer period, which is linked primarily to the counting down or really counting up to Shavuot. The Torah instructs us to count from after the first days of Pesach up until Shavuot, 50 days, in anticipation for the giving of the Torah, just as our ancestors no doubt did when they left Egypt. But it's not simply a matter of counting. In Hebrew, the counting of the Omer is the Sfirat Omer. But the word sphira also means to shine, to illuminate, you know, similar to the word sapphire, which is where probably the word sapphire derives from, the word sapir in Hebrew. So when we are counting, we are striving to make every day count, to bring an extra bit of light and to brighten our lives and the world around us. And we do so primarily through doing quite a bit of self-introspection and just reflecting on our character, our behavior, our conduct, and trying each day of the 49 days of the counting of the Omer to better ourselves. And in doing so, certainly better the world around us.
So is it coincidental that the COVID pitches up basically at the same time and we're in a period of introspection because we're all at home? Tomorrow's a public holiday, so we can stay home as well. And so from a point of view, carry on. No, over to you.
So nothing is coincidental because everything in this world, every microcosmic detail is obviously orchestrated carefully by God. So certainly not coincidence and quite a striking, lesson that we can learn from it. I actually heard today, I don't know how scientific this is, but I heard today that the latest scientific research suggests that the ultimate quarantine time for COVID-19 is 49 days. That's really pretty much the time it takes for the virus to leave one's body for someone who, please God, recovers. So there's another link between the 49 days of the Omer and the coronavirus pandemic that we find ourselves in, which is no doubt a very challenging time, tough time for many, many people. You and I were speaking earlier, and I think it's great to be able to find the silver lining or to make the most of it and, you know, try to transform it into a positive experience. But I think the reality is that at face value, it presents a big challenge for many people. But it does provide the opportunity to stay home and look inwards and reflect and try get in touch with who we truly are. And who we truly are, each one of us, is something amazing, something brilliant. And it's an opportunity to refine our character and really reveal the inner potential that we each have.
And it's quite remarkable how quickly we as people, I'm sure not only referring to Jews here, but generally the world has managed to get involved in this, have taken the steps that were asked of us, locked ourselves in. Of course, there have been the exceptions, but generally speaking, from a point of view of the public, we've knuckled down, we've made changes in our lives, we're conforming to what they're asking of us, and it's remarkable in that sense that we're able to do that and so quickly, because I mean, if you think about it, today's only 30 something days that we've been in lockdown, and the world has changed, and we've knuckled down and we're getting on with the job.
100%. I think that too is a very powerful lesson for us, that if there's anything that we always thought was impossible, or that we never thought would change, I think though all those conceptions have been shattered. You know, we should learn from this that really anything is possible, and even if we've got into a habit or a routine of something, that doesn't mean that it always has to be that way. So much has changed, as you say, almost overnight. It's given us an opportunity to reevaluate our priorities and what is truly important to us. And I think we can be particularly proud of the South African government and leadership for the way that it's handled the crisis, even more so of the Jewish community and its leadership, who really were, I think, you know, in a certain sense, the forerunners of taking precautions and acting responsibly and safely. And ultimately, really, in order to preserve the health and safety of not just ourselves, but those around us, there are many people that, you know, stand to lose much more by staying at home and not going out to work and practicing their regular routine life than they would if they were to go out. You know, those that are generally young and fit and healthy could probably take the chance. But what's been made very clear across the world is that there's nothing more important and sacred than human life, and the respect for that life and its sanctity and its value is something that I personally find very encouraging.
And it's wonderful to see that we have a president who's really conducted himself with aplomb. He's been dignified. He's done the job, and it looks like the country's followed suit. And also what has happened in the communities is that they've rallied around and they're helping in the distribution of parcels and in the distribution of assistance to those who really can't afford it. And I have to pay tribute to some of these organizations where the social workers are out in some of the far-flung areas, something similar to Hammanskraal. And I just want to relate a quick story on that score, is that our housemaid, our housekeeper, lives in an area outside of town. She's locked up here with us in Johannesburg, but her family are out of town, and they were not able to get food. Apparently food wasn't being delivered. We made some phone calls and eventually got hold of the Department of Water and Housing by coincidence. And they, within 4 or 5 hours, a food parcel was delivered to that area, to those who hadn't had food right from the beginning. And I have to really compliment to them. A gentleman by the name of Squire was unbelievable. He got hold of the social worker in that area, and she pulled strings, and it was just amazing to see. So really have to pay compliments to everyone who's really been involved. And from the Hebrew Order of David's point of view, we've tried to assist where we can. We're assisting the Union of Jewish Women in providing certain funds, and they in their turn are helping the communities out there. And really a shukar to those women who are doing amazing work, and everyone else who's been wonderful. So we have really come together as a nation. It's something to be held.
I think it's incredible. I think, you know, the sadness is that it highlights the inequality that still exists within Absolutely. Our country, which needs to obviously be addressed properly long term. But at the moment, under the circumstances, I think adversity like this and these kind of difficulties have a tendency to either bring out the best from within ourselves or, God forbid, the worst. And I think it really has brought out the best in a lot of people, and you know, really touched on our human side and has appealed to our sensitivity and kindness. And I think for us, the challenge is to maintain that long term. Please God, this will all pass soon. And, you know, life will revert to normal, whatever that will mean once this is all over. is questionable. But even then, you know, when things are more routine, if we can retain that level of sensitivity and consideration for others and really put what's most important forward, that'll be a great lesson learned from this whole experience.
And I also want to take just a moment to pay tribute to the shuls who really gone out of their way to be in communication with the congregants. And I mean, the Johannesburg Sephardic congregation, Hebrew congregation is no different. And Rabbi, you're leading the way. And from the, can you just give us some insights of what you're doing and keeping in touch? By the way, you have the Sephardic congregation is having Torah and tea with the Rebbetzin Temi Hadar. It's Mrs. Hadar who's going to be doing this. But on your notice, it says Monday the 3rd of May. And I do think that it's either Sunday the 3rd or Monday the 4th. So change the notice. But if anybody wants to contact the shul for that information, where would they go?
They are welcome to contact us through the Facebook page. And I think the shuls have really been incredible. Again, but the truth is everyone has. The shuls, the schools, the communal organizations. I think everyone's really just tried to, you know, come forward and offer what they can. But, you know, spiritual guidance and leadership is probably, you know, more necessary and valued now than ever. And at the same time, much more challenging. So much of it revolves around the personal human face-to-face interaction and around the communal gatherings. And those are obviously have been ruled out for the past number of weeks. And yet there has been so much activity, so much Torah being taught and studied, so much connection and relationships being formed and gatherings taking place, obviously all virtually over the internet. But really, it's like I take my hat off to all the rabbis and rabbitans and teachers and educators and schools and shuls. There's been a lot taking place. We've started a Sunday morning Zoom kind of minyan, not a proper minyan because we're not together in person, so we can't actually recite the parts of the prayers that require a quorum of 10 men. But everyone puts on tefillin together. We share words of Torah and say some of the prayers together. There are those that are doing that on a daily basis. I'm talking about rabbis and shuls. There are classes and lessons and shiurim that are taking place. We've even used the opportunity to tap into some international speakers who normally are, you know, on the other side of the world, and we don't really consider them for our audiences and communities with a few exceptions throughout the year. And now that everyone is really connecting over the internet, it makes little difference whether you're located in South Africa or elsewhere. So there's been a fortune of classes and gatherings and, you know, coming together in prayer and in study that I think have really been an anchor of support and guidance and light and leadership for our communities.
So we're talking to Rabbi Moti Hadar. He's the rabbi of the Johannesburg Sephardi Hebrew Congregation. Not only that, he's the principal of the Torah Academy Boys School and an educator and a rabbi where the shul is at the Hebrew Order of David Center, the HAD Center, in Orchards, which we're proud to be associated with you. And Rabbi, just give us a full sense of the program that you set up, because obviously you're in communication with your, not only your school, I'm sure you're teaching online a lot, but what you've done, the sort of program that you're offering to your congregants and each person. So you've got the Facebook page, they can come and look what you're doing, but give us a sense of what's happening.
Sure. So I think, speaking for myself and I think for all rabbis and rabbis and communal leaders, what's most important now, but always, is really personal care and support, especially now where there are people that have been in lockdown for 5 weeks and are living alone or perhaps with a partner that don't have the resources or the, you know, level of health and fitness to go out even for their own essential needs. So there's some practical support that we have tried to offer for those who need help with grocery shopping, etc., as well as emotional support and company and just, you know, for people to know that even if things might seem lonely within the walls of their own home, there is always someone that is thinking about them and caring for them. So I think that's of paramount importance always and now more than ever. In addition, there are, like I mentioned, there are, we get together for prayer services over, all over the internet, as well as classes. Yesterday I gave a class on the Parashah, which was very enjoyable for myself and hopefully for those who attended as well. My wife normally gives a monthly ladies Torah and tea, where the ladies get together one evening throughout the month and have some refreshments and learn something, perhaps make a craft or bake something, depending on the time of the year and the upcoming Chagim. So she's doing that on Monday evening as well, obviously again over the internet. I try to be in touch with the community individually as well as on a communal and collective level, sending out voice notes or videos, because if we can't see each other in person, I think it's still good to see another person's face and to be reminded of how they look and have as close as possible to that human connection and interaction as we can. Unfortunately, things beyond that are limited, and again, credit to the Jewish community for completely abiding by the rules and recommendations. And we do look forward to when we'll once again be able to reconvene in the synagogue on a consistent basis. But for now, we are certainly trying to do the best we can under the circumstances. We've had a beautiful, which I know a number of communities are doing this and many other fantastic ideas, but we get together over the internet, over Zoom, just after Shabbat ends every Saturday night for a communal Havdalah. So many people aren't necessarily aware that, you know, just as is a very common, you know, well-known practice to usher Shabbat in with Kiddush on Friday night. We say a prayer over a cup of wine and a prayer that sanctifies Shabbat. So we do something similar on a Saturday evening. We make a prayer on wine as well as on some kind of spice or herbal incense and a candle. And that kind of, you know, distinguishes between Shabbat, which is coming to a close, and the upcoming week. And it's another way of recognizing the holiness and the sanctity of Shabbat that at that point is ending and departing. So we've been doing that over the internet as well, where everyone about, you know, 20 minutes after Shabbat ends is able to connect, some with their own wine and spices and candles, others just washing and joining in as we sing the Havdalah prayer, which is a beautiful prayer.
So this week's parsha is Kiddushim, is that right?
So it's actually a double portion this week. We read two portions of the parsha. So Kiddushim is correct, and before that we read the portion of Achremot combined, Achremot and Kiddushim. And Kiddushim is quite a loaded parasha, in that it contains 51 of the 613 commandments. Now it's close to 10% of the commandments of the whole Torah are contained in just this 1 week's parasha.
Really?
Yeah, something quite fascinating. Well, it'll be even more this week because in Achremot there are 28. So combined, 79, and that's more than 10%. But in Kiddushim itself, it's a parasha which really prescribes and mentions many of the 613 commandments.
Do you want to highlight some of them, or you want to give us an expand on that?
I can. For that, you really should have joined yesterday's class. But I'll be more than happy to. The truth is, I'll just touch on one. Again, we're not going to get through all 51, but there's one which certainly stands out, because in this week's parasha we have the commandment to love your fellow Jew as you love yourself. And a number of the sages have highlighted how prominent this commandment is, to love your fellow as you love yourself. Some have, you know, Hillel said that this is the entire Torah. This commandment encapsulates the whole Torah, and everything else is really an explanation and an elaboration on this one commandment. And the famous sage Rabbi Akiva, who's also strongly linked with the time of the Omer, is the one who said that this is a klal gadol b'Torah. It's an important primary principle within the Torah. So similar to what we were talking about earlier in terms of, you know, the chesed and the outreach and the care for one's fellow, a lot of it stems from an actual commandment, one of the 613 commandments in this week's portion. In fact, there's a great Hasidic story where at a Hasidic gathering in the times of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, and his students were sitting around one evening and were talking to each other, having what's called a fabringen, encouraging each other to strengthen their resolve and their commitment to Hashem and to the Torah mitzvot. And one of them raised his glass and made a toast, as you'd say, L'chaim. And his toast was that God should help him attain and fulfill the commandment of loving Hashem. We mention every day in the Shema, at least twice a day, Ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, you should love your God, love Hashem your God. And he made a toast that, you know, he should be successful in this. That was his wish, that he should be able to truly, you know, reach mastery over this commandment. And another one of the Hasidim raised his glass and in response said, he made a toast, he said, L'chaim, that I should be successful in the mitzvah of V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, loving your fellow as you love yourself. Almost like a response to the first individual. And a whole debate broke out as to which of these two commandments, both which instruct us to love, which is itself a very interesting and stimulating discussion. How can we be commanded to love anything or anyone? It's an emotion. And the short answer is that our emotions really evolve from our intellect, or how we think about things. So if we alter the way we perceive things and think and contemplate about topics, that'll ultimately alter how we feel, how we respond emotionally. So this debate broke out as to which of these commandments is greater, loving God or loving your fellow. And ultimately, it landed up, so to speak, on the desk of the Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, Rebbe Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the Baal HaTanya. And he responded, and he said the two are intertwined. They are, you know, both of paramount importance. And, you know, it's said elsewhere that it's really actually not so, it's impossible to have the ultimate true love of God without love of your fellow, and vice versa. One cannot truly love one's fellow without complete, you know, really loving God. So the two are obviously of tremendous paramount importance. They clearly, you know, cannot be overstated. But if one, so to speak, had to identify the superior of the two, it says in the Torah that God loves his children. God loves us. And one way to express your love for someone is to love those who he or she loves. You love their beloved as an expression of love for them yourself. If you truly care for someone, you'll extend that care and concern for their children, for their loved ones as well. So when we love our fellow, that itself is an expression of love for God as well. And therefore, if there had to be a greater of the two, it would be love for one's fellow, because we are loving those who Hashem loves. So again, at this time, where we are limited in our interaction physically with so many people around us, we don't get to see our loved ones or many people all together, it's important to really dig deep. And while we're all focusing on our own survival and, you know, preserving ourselves, it's important to be considerate for others as well, especially the less fortunate, and to find creative means of reaching out even while we're in lockdown, along the lines of what you discussed earlier.
So the Hebrew Order of David, you're listening to the HOD Hour, the Hebrew Order of David International, over 115 years old. We're privileged to have with us Rabbi Moti Adar, who's the rabbi from the Johannesburg Sephardi Hebrew Congregation. And we started off the discussion talking a little bit about coincidence. And Rabbi, you said there's no coincidence, but actually it's quite a coincidence in my view that tonight we're talking about V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, which happens to be the motto of the Hebrew Order of David, love thy neighbor as thyself. And it stood us in good stead for all these years as the rallying point of what the Hebrew Order of David is about. So, coincidence or not, it's pertinent that this week's parsha actually highlights, as you said, an important aspect of what the Hebrew Order of David is about, but also what Jews are about, and we proudly use that as our rallying point and how we operate as an organization.
100%.
So, okay. Rabbi, let's move on a little bit to what one should be doing aside from the myriad of information that is that abounds in the internet today, from Zoom to tiny URLs, and now Google has come on board with a completely different system, which now can allow you to go with up to 300 people. And so I'm sure that the competition is going to be rife in that aspect. But from a personal point of view, notwithstanding the fact that you can get all this information on Google and you don't want to spend your whole day looking up stuff, but really to what should one be focusing on as individuals right now?
I think it's a great question, although it's a very broad question. So I'll try, and I don't profess to have the answers at all, but I've been asking this question myself, and I can share some of the answers that I've heard. I do think that first and foremost is to preserve one's health, which would be best accomplished by following the laws and the guidelines. So that definitely, you know, comes first. I think there's also not one blanket answer for everyone, because I heard an interesting quote that one of my colleagues shared, that, you know, we find ourselves saying, or many of us find ourselves saying these days, we're all in the same boat. And the reality is we're not in the same boat. We're all in different boats in the same storm. But my boat and your boat might look a bit different. Thank God I'm blessed to have a wife and five kids at home that, you know, keep us busy. And we have a lot to focus on and a lot of joy, a lot of nachas and a lot of learning and a lot of activity. And others find themselves in very different situations. Some can find themselves very lonely, others overwhelmed, and this expands to every area of life, be it, you know, financial or work or many different areas as well. So I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer. For some, I think the goal is simply to survive, just get through this and come out on the other side. And I think if we have expectations of ourselves that are too high or too ambitious, we might leave ourselves feeling disappointed or let down. And for some people, you know, really the bare minimum is the maximum, so to speak. However, for those that are in a position that have the resources, be it mental or emotional or material, I think this, we need to find the opportunity that exists with what we're in what we're going through at the moment. And there is an opportunity to grow and to come out of this far stronger than we actually entered into it. I mean, the coronavirus is wreaking havoc around the world, around the, you know, financial markets across the globe and on many levels. And again, it's a challenge that we would rather not have, but it's a challenge. And the point of any challenge is not just to survive it, which again might be the goal for some, but ultimately to come out of it stronger and better and improved. So I think an important ingredient in trying to achieve that would be to try and maintain a sense of normalcy where possible. Have a routine to your day. Get dressed in the morning. Don't lounge around the whole day in pajamas. But, you know, don't act in such a way that this isn't really real life and it's not a real day and it doesn't really count. As I mentioned, the counting of the Omer is a message to us to make every single day count. So even in these times, we're not going to work and our regular routine is completely broken. It's still important to make every day count. Something significant, something productive has to be achieved each and every day. One way to do that is to set goals. And it can be an incredible tool in really bringing out our potential and making sure that we don't get too lazy, too complacent, is to have goals. And those are obviously dependent on each individual and their character and their circumstances and ambitions. But if we have the drive and the motivation, then I think there's an opportunity now to achieve the goals that we up until now have maybe not had the energy for, the time for, or the patience for. And in any aspect of our lives, if we set a goal and we truly have the drive to achieve it, just think about what could be accomplished over this period, you know, where our calendars have, so to speak, been cleared to a large degree, and we may have a lot of time on our hands, and there's this general focus on prioritizing that which is truly important and everything else just shelving for now, I think a lot could be accomplished. And you mentioned how we're now, you know, 3 weeks into the Omer, entering the fourth week of the Omer, and each week focuses on a different sphera, a different midah, a different character trait. So the upcoming week is going to focus on the trait of Netzach, which really, to a large degree, does mean ambition and drive and that willingness to see something through all the way till the end. So one tip I can give is to set a goal. Start with one, make sure that it's achievable, make sure that you can act on it immediately, something that can be feasible during this state of lockdown. And I think we might surprise ourselves by how quickly we reach that goal and are able to move on to the next.
I think that, and it was highlighted the other night, there was a discussion on how to survive, how you should be looking after your business, what you should be doing. And the ability to, what was highlighted in the discussion was the ability to change direction in what you're doing. So perhaps this is a moment when your business can't operate and when maybe you should be looking at other markets or other opportunities. Are you taking advantage of that? But I know that's an easy thing. And the thought that crossed my mind when the speaker was talking about that, it crossed my mind that that's easier said than done. But in reality, this might be a moment when I think every day we get up, we go to work, we do what we have to do, we come home and, you know, the days go on and time seems to fly by. But do we really ever take the opportunity to have a look at what we're doing? And I'm looking at the Hebrew Order of David as well as an organization. You know, this is going to change the nature of what we do, as many organizations are going to, I'm sure, are going to find. Meetings are going to be changed. The way we operate fundraising is going to change dramatically for everyone. And I think that we all should be looking at other opportunities which perhaps have been on the back burner or perhaps in discussion, not just administratively, but just to get on and try and do things differently and perhaps make a different kind of an impact in the world. Which, are we doing that? And have we been doing the right thing? And is this now the opportunity to make the change?
100%. I think that's very wise and insightful. And I think for two reasons. One is because, like you say, we have the opportunity that we don't normally have to take that valuable time out and do a bit of self-reflection and introspection and to really reassess, you know, who we are and what we stand for on a business level, a professional level, on a spiritual level, on a personal relationship level, on every level. As well as additionally, adversity brings out the best within us often. Often when we are challenged and our back is against the wall is when, you know, necessity is the mother of all invention. That's really when we come up with the greatest ideas and we, you know, have the brightest, vision of the way forward. So I think this is an opportunity, could certainly be an opportunity to reinvent oneself, you know, to take the time again on a professional level. Certainly, I know if I reflect on what I'm witnessing and experiencing in the school industry, so to speak, both within Torah Academy and what I see schools around the country and around the world are doing is, you know, overnight we kind of changed our whole approach and were able to set up valuable, productive schooling and teaching and learning that's taking place over the internet. And things that up until now seems very far-fetched and beyond our skill set. And everyone's just come to the party. If I take the opportunity to really just say a huge yasher koach and thank you and take my hat off and give a lot of credit to the educators. I've no doubt that, like, you know, the educators that I deal with at Torah Academy, educators around throughout the schools in the community and around the country and around the world have really stood up to the plate and taken on the challenge and overcome a lot of inhibition and uncertainty to put their students first. And they've done it successfully. So the point I'm making is that we should never sell ourselves short or write off opportunities that might come our way. I think we're capable of a lot more than we often give ourselves credit for. So we have the opportunity to reflect about who we are and what's truly important to us and what we want to occupy our time with and what our goals are for life. We also have the opportunity to reinvent ourselves. And just as businesses are going to emerge from this with a very different approach, we could do the same thing on a personal level and on a spiritual level. Take the time to really assess that which is a priority in our lives. And even when, again, as I say, we go back to some level of what's normal or what will be the new normal, take it with us, grow from this experience and really realign ourselves with what our true ultimate goals are.
So when you highlighted something a little earlier also about the way you conduct yourselves, your daily routine, etc. And I think often in these kind of, well, I mean, we don't have these kind of circumstances, but presented with this type of circumstance where you don't have to go anywhere. You really don't have to get dressed. You could put on your tracksuit and you could mope around the house in your slippers. Maybe one should change one's regime in that way and get up in the morning, brush your teeth, have a shower, get dressed, and get yourself ready to work rather than, you know, just letting things go by and the next thing you look, it's lunchtime. And you had lunch and then you're planning supper. Whereas, in fact, if you put yourself into some sort of altogether in that, you know, dressed up to work, I don't say you have to put on a suit and tie, but you could, you know, get dressed ready for work. And I think that might also make a change in attitude, because sometimes, you know, in these kind of circles, the tendency or the sort of the leaning is just, I'll do it tomorrow type of thing. And I think that in the beginning, when the first few days I worked and it was really working, and then I started to slip back and I realized that part of the problem is that I didn't bother to really get dressed for work. And, you know, I took the view that I could work as I was, but in fact it wasn't working. And so now I've had to change to be able to get dressed and be ready for work. And then I'm in the working mode, because I am set up to work at home and I can work at home. I'm fortunate in that regard. I could really work anywhere in the world. And, but I think you made a point, you know, take the view that you are ready to do something. Don't just take the view that just watch another program on TV or, you know, have another cup of coffee.
Yeah, I agree. I think, listen, once again, not everyone's in, different people are in different circumstances. So I think some are finding themselves overwhelmed with how much they have to do at the moment, and others are finding, you know, themselves looking to come up with ideas of how they can fill their time and fill the day. But I think irrespective, I agree with you, the way we dress, the way it affects the way we behave. I tell it to my students at school often that they should dress in a presentable way and in a respectful way, because when we dress well, we behave well, we think better. So I think if people, you know, dress in a way that suggests that today counts, today is a day of value and of purpose and of meaning, then they're more likely to make it be that. It's not just about work. I think, you know, our diet, the way we eat, our exercise, our routine, I agree. We should not just fall into slip into a mode of an extended, you know, long weekend in pajamas for 5 weeks on end. At the same time, if someone's in a position that they can, you know, let their hair down a little bit and relax and walk around in slippers, then by all means, take advantage of it. It's got to be in a way that doesn't add undue pressure and stress to oneself, but rather just drives a person to be productive and motivated. There are plenty of stresses and pressures without us compounding them, with unnecessary expectations of ourselves.
When you're conducting classes, you can see the students, right? I mean, you're on Zoom or whatever, so you can actually see them. So you want them to be not in their pajamas, I guess, because everyone else can see them.
Correct. So there's obviously a function on Zoom to turn the camera on or off. We have asked our students to make sure that the cameras are on. It makes it much more interactive. The teachers are able to pick up to some degree on the visual cues and ensure that everyone is participating and engaging. It's not so simple because, once again, this is an area where different people are in different circumstances, depending on their device that they're using to connect to the internet and the internet connectivity. It's not as feasible for one as it may be for the other, and none of us had any time to prepare for this. We were kind of just thrown into it. But for all the reasons we discussed, and there's so much value in not just sitting with your camera off, but actually turning it on, seeing others and letting people see you and engaging. Having said that, I just read an article this past week where there's something called Zoom fatigue, which is quite a common term already. Some people find it very stressful and pressurizing having their camera on in meetings. Not only talking in the school context, you know, kids might, if students have the ability to turn the camera off in real life class in school, they might want to do that as well. But even in a professional or even a social context. Some find, you know, can be very self-conscious, and they see themselves on the screen as well, and they get the sense that everyone is looking at them and scrutinizing them. And for some people, that actually adds so much unnecessary, unhealthy pressure that it detracts from the objective of the meeting. So once again, like everything in life, there isn't really a one-size-fits-all approach, but I would say that as a general rule, having one's camera on and being able to see others and know that others are seeing you, it also helps, you know, add a sense of human interaction that we are lacking and so deeply craving at this time, to whatever degree is possible.
So it must be a very steep learning curve for both, for the student and for the teacher, because the teachers are used to, you know, face-to-face in the classroom. Now you're doing it online. It's technically challenging because a lot of them, I suppose, had to learn what to do and be taught. But at the end of the day, it's a completely different experience. But as teachers, I suppose, you can pick up and really learn pretty fast. Do you find those students are accommodating or responding?
Yeah, so far they've been amazing. Both the students and the teachers have actually been phenomenal. And I really just, you know, take my hats off and say kol hakavod to them. Teachers have really come to the party, have invested time and energy and just been open-minded to really learn how, you know, new techniques and new approaches. And many of them have commented already that their teaching will never be the same again, even when we please got back in a physical classroom. And the students as well. Interestingly, the students have really embraced the structure and the learning. Some of them have even commented to me that they prefer the style of learning, but they've really come to the party and are, you know, so to speak, playing the game, investing in their own education and making the most of it. I'm very, very proud personally of both my students and my teachers, and I'll take this opportunity to thank them publicly. There's a lot of new skills that have been learned. It's not all fun and easy. The students, some of them actually find this online learning much more tiring than a regular day of learning, which, you know, contains within it a lot of social interaction and relaxation as well. So some of them are quite wiped at the end of the day, but they've been phenomenal about it, and I'm really, really impressed and pleased.
How many hours of teaching do you do a day? And is it, it's Monday to Friday, I presume?
It is Monday to Friday. We started, when we stopped school a few weeks before Pesach, there was so much unknown at that time. And we did have online classes then, but it was a bit more informal and optional to some degree. And since after Pesach, when it was clear that we weren't going back to school, we put together a proper plan in place. So it was not easy deciding how many classes and how many hours of lessons to have a day. On the one hand, we want to give as much, you know, we want to learn and teach and learn as much as we can and provide the education that we are committed to. On the other hand, we would need to be sensitive to people's capacity, both our teachers, many of whom are home with their kids as well, and our students, who, like I said, also have their capacity. So we try to find the middle ground. And I'm speaking for Torah Academy High Schools. We have, on average, between 5 to 6 lessons a day. We have a later start and an earlier end, and we focus on our core subjects, both in terms of our Talmudei Kodesh, our Jewish studies, and our academic studies. So we've tried as best as we can to, you know, kind of get the best of both worlds, to have routine and structure and productivity and to continue teaching and learning while at the same time not overbearing and applying too much pressure. And it's early days still, or perhaps it may be. And so far it's really gone well, and we've gotten a lot of positive feedback. And again, some of our kids are even further ahead in some of their syllabi than they would be had we been at school. They just really made good use of the time, guided by dedicated and loving teachers, and they're doing really well, thank God. We also try to create a few, you know, more informal and social opportunities. Even the learning itself, our objective, our goal was not only for the sake of the academic education, but for the sake of the structure that you and I just spoke about, and being able to ensure that structure for the kids as well, that they have a time where their day starts, where their day ends kind of thing, as well as giving them the opportunity to see people that are not, you know, within the four walls of their own home, even if it's through a camera and a screen. So we have other additional, like, informal learning opportunities as well. And they get together on a Motzei Shabbat on a Saturday night and learn some more Torah, hear a story from a guest speaker. We have our older exchange students, Yeshiva Bachrim from overseas, that, you know, learn with some of the kids, learn Torah throughout the day one-on-one and have some learning programs throughout the evening. Tonight, for example, at 8 o'clock, there's an optional program for the high school students who would like to get online, join a Zoom, learn something together, play a game of cahoots where they test their knowledge and what they've learned and win some prizes, providing them also just some other opportunities to connect with their friends in a less formal environment than the online classroom.
And what happens with the exam timetables and all that? Are you going to run tests, or is that going to be wait until this period is over?
So my default answer to all such questions is I don't know, because there's so much unknown and uncertainty at the moment. And the truth is we don't know. In terms of testing, we've already had tests. Even in the first 2 weeks of school since Pesach, some of the students have already written tests in certain subjects. And again, the teachers have been very creative and innovative in how they've administered those tests. In terms of the long-term picture of exams and the rest of the calendar year, you know, just I think an hour or two ago, there was an announcement from the Minister of Education, and we need to be able to assess that and see how it's going to apply to us and how we're going to be able to apply it. So for now, we're just trying to do what makes the most sense to us, what seems in the best interest of our students for the moment. And we hope to be able to, I really am confident that they will step up to whatever the challenges are as the year proceeds.
And the going back to school, are the schools reopening, or is this going to be a staggered approach? Are you going according to the program that the government has set?
So to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure what our options are. It looks like the government is taking a staggered phased-in approach, bringing certain classes and certain students back to school over a fairly extended period of time. As a private school and an independent school, I'm not certain personally if we are at liberty to create our own guidelines or if we too need to abide by those. But irrespective, what has become clear is that even when the opportunity is available for us to return to school, there are a number of health and safety requirements that need to be in place, and we need to really ensure that we're, you know, what's been the top priority all along, which is everyone's health and safety, is not compromised or jeopardized, both in terms of students and teachers. So there's a lot of unknown and uncertainty at the moment, which is really the, you know, the general cause of anxiety. And we are trying to take it in our stride, you know, one day at a time, and really just, you know, give the best educational offering that we can for now. And the same applies to schools and synagogues and communities. We don't yet know what the future holds, so we're kind of doing our best for now and hoping to, at the same time, lay the foundation for what's coming next, irrespective of what it may be.
So, yes, because, I mean, things are really in a state of flux. Nobody knows. And I think tonight the President is going to lay out some of the items for level 4. I mean, we're quite used to these levels. We've got levels 1, 2, 3, et cetera, in Eskom, we've got stuff. We're getting used to the word level. It's quite innovative in the fact the way that they've set it up. And, you know, I think that it is sort of working. It's difficult to define. If you ask people, you know, that I ask a lot of people how they interpret what they're doing. So some are very clear and some are very confused. They don't know, because, you know, what does 30% mean? What does this mean? You know, are they in level 3 or level 4? What's going on? I mean, and I think that a lot of, you know, most people would, of course, like to get back to business and start earning again, which is, of course, a big problem. I don't know how we're going to come out of that one. But from a point of view of being, you know, going forward, you know, as you rightly said, you know, it's difficult to make decisions when you're not 100% sure of which way the cat will jump. So it's been a fascinating discussion. Rabbi, would you like to say anything more, a little bit on a personal level, on any messages you'd like to give before we wrap? And I told you it would be a quick hour, and the time has just flown by. I'm sure you'll agree.
I do, and you did, and you're right. So my message is that if there's anyone else that Stan has asked to speak, and if you perhaps thought that you don't have an hour's worth of conversation to share, I suggest you give it a shot, because Stan is a great person to converse with. So I appreciate the opportunity. I'll give a shout out to my family that I love very dearly, and to my community and my school, but really to the whole community, the whole society at large. I pray that we all do every day for our well-being. And please God, the positive goals and ideas that we discussed in this meeting, if we can achieve them ourselves, speaking for myself, come out of this somehow, you know, reinvented and realigned with our priorities and goals, and come out stronger than we entered it, you know, each one of us will be far better off in the world at large. I heard a great, I'll end with one teaching, if I may, Stan.
Yes.
There was a talk arranged last week by three local communities. It was the Arch and K-Space and the Base, and they had a talk with Rabbi Yossi Jacobson from overseas, and he shared a story about Rabbi Shaul Salanter, who was the founder of the Musar movement. And he said that when he, you know, in his old age, he reflected and said that when he was younger, he wanted to change the world, and he decided he's going to change the world. And as he grew a bit older, he realized that he can't. It's not as easy as he thought. So he decided he's going to set out to change his country. That was his new goal, to change the country for the better. As time went on, a few years later, he realized that too wasn't so feasible. So he set his goals lower. He said, I want to change my city. And after that, he realized not so simple either. So when he was older, yes, he said, I'm going to change my family. And eventually, when he was quite, you know, in his older years, he realized, he says, I realized that the only one I can change is myself. And he said, what a pity. He has the punchline. He said, what a pity. Because had I started earlier on changing myself, by now I would have changed the world. The reality is our job is to look after ourselves and our families. And if we can, during this Omer period, make every day count and refine and polish our character traits and improve our own character and our own behavior and our own personalities, and each one of us, you know, try to be the best that we can be, and at the same time look out for our fellow, then please God, together we will change the world for good.
Amen. And thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you, Rabbi, for coming on the show. Thank you to your family for allowing you the time to do this. I know this is the time when you should be looking after the kids, but it's also an excuse to get away from that and have a break. So it's always got a plus side to it. So I wish everybody a good Shabbos and everything of the best, and stay safe and stay well, and good night.